Morrison, Reel 5.
Which rather surprised me, because, but I'm sure he was perfectly sincere in thinking that, thought that he was right. But it surprises me that a priest shouldn't believe in the possibility of redemption. If you kill somebody, there's no chance of them being redeemed. It seemed very extraordinary to me. However, I didn't put that to him because I had been told to concentrate on my own question, that I should have liked to have put it to him, because it struck me as very extraordinary.
After you left the ambulance driving, what did you do? You didn't have to find another job, actually.
No, I didn't have to, but I did. I wouldn't have quite known what to do with myself, I think, if I hadn't.
Were you living at home?
I was staying then with was living then in London with my uncle, who's a doctor and lived in Wimpole Street. Because my mother had married again and had gone away. So did a shorthand training and I got a job quite easily. Because I think even then, as it is today, only today shorthand typists can command enormous salaries. We didn't then, but we were still, it was still a job that needed to be done. Of course, such a lot of women had gone abroad, and many of them had gone to France and Belgium.
What was this job? Did it have any connection with peace?
No, it hadn't. No, it was. I was secretary to the boss of the Armstrong Sidley. I was a little more than a shorthand typist. I was a sort of private secretary to an executive. So it was all to do with cars and the making of cars. I thought it was all right. I didn't think that they were, in those days, they weren't making bombing aeroplanes the way they are now.
By taking that job, weren't you releasing a man to go and fight?
No, I don't think so. I think only women ever did shorthand typing. Oh, that's not true altogether. I know that men do, but they don't do it in that sort of capacity, do they? They do it as parliamentary reporters and probably are very good at it. But this was more servicing private cars. It was nothing to do with the Sidley, whatever it's called, that made the bombers afterwards. And then I had a row with him because I thought he told such terrible lies and rather dangerous lies about cars, and left. But I got another job as a secretary, typist, shorthand typist to a doctor, which my uncle got for me. He went to Harley Street.
Is that what you were doing when the war ended?
Yeah, that's what I was doing when the war ended, yes. And then I went out to India first time. Stay with some relations, and I stayed there longer than I had intended to. But I came back very much disillusioned with the British Raj. The whole sort of behaviour of the Indians, who we called natives, and who were obviously of a lower order, I found it quite upsetting.
How did you become involved with the actual peace movement instead of just being an individual?
Well, I didn't become involved with the peace movement really until Dick Shepherd started his Peace Pledge Union, and that was in 1934. And I'd known the brother of a friend of mine, his name's the same as mine, though he's not a relation, John Morrison. He was very friendly, as were a whole lot of other young men, with Dick Shepherd. And he introduced me to him, and I was fascinated with his whole attitude. Naturally, I was fascinated because he'd been a chaplain in the army, but had decided that war was incompatible with the teachings of Jesus. And it was then he sent out the postcard, sent out his letter asking men to send a postcard saying, "I renounce war, will never support or sanction another." And that's how the Peace Pledge Union came into being, and I became a member right from the start.
And what happened when World War II came along? Did that cause a flurry of activity in the Peace Pledge Union?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very much so. You see, when somebody else is waging war, then pacifists start to wage peace like anything. And it would be so much better if they'd been waging it quietly all along. But, yes, there was. Well, probably Fenner may have told you about the Central Board for Conscientious Objectors. That started then. They were not a propaganda organisation, but they gave advice and helped people with conscientious objection. Oh yes, there were great activities, and of course the great number of people went to prison. More were prepared to take what was called alternative service, which was going on the land. Oh, the very strange things were alternative service, serving in a grocer's shop, or extraordinary. But yes, there were great activities. There's far less activity now because it's very difficult to know what to do. It's all a slow job persuading people.
And what did you yourself do?
In the Peace Pledge Union.
In the beginning of the Second World War.
Oh, I didn't do anything. I was already then I did a lot of open-air speaking, and strangely enough, I came across, you probably wouldn't recognise it, but I came across in a magazine that was got out at Christmas time. I didn't know my picture was in it. I think I've got it here. It's called This England. It comes out twice a year. And it was given to me, and there's a whole thing on Speaker's Corner. Though you might not know it, that's me. And you can see underneath it says, "Join the Peace Pledge Union." At least I think there's a poster which says "Join the Peace Pledge Union."
Yes, yes. But it doesn't identify you.
Oh, no, we're not identified. I don't know. I suppose it's just somebody who went around taking photos of all those people. So I've held a lot of positions in the Peace Pledge Union. I was, for many years, their campaign organiser. And I wrote regularly in Peace News. I wrote some pamphlets and...
Was it through activities for them that you were arrested?
Yes, yes. This was right at the beginning of the war in 1940. I was still going on with my open-air speaking, and we'd had message, I may have got it somewhere, from Gandhi. General Secretary of the Peace Pledge Union, Stuart Morris, had written to Gandhi to see if we could get some advice as to what he would think we ought to do. And I was saying what he thought. I really wasn't saying anything subversive, though I might have been, I suppose, when I was arrested. And
you were speaking in Hyde Park?
Yes, I was speaking in Hyde Park, yes.
And what were you charged with?
Insulting words and behaviour. It's a very old phrase. Most of my friends and relations thought that I'd been brawling. But in a way, it was fortunate I was only charged with that, because if you were charged with sedition or something of that kind, I would have had a much longer sentence. As it was, I only had a month. Though, mind you, that seemed long enough to me, especially as it was just at the time of the Battle of Britain. And it isn't amusing to be under bombardment and in confinement. But we were let out. We were allowed. Well, we were allowed, when I say let out, the cell doors were opened. Whereas in the men's prison, they weren't prisons, they weren't. And it must have been pretty awful, I think. Because though you couldn't do anything, really, nevertheless, you felt you could, if you could move. If you could move out.
Would you go to a shelter in the prison?
In Holloway?
Yes.
No, there wasn't a shelter.
Attack. Or you would just walk out into the...
It was just that they allowed us, they unlocked the doors. So that you could move, you weren't locked in. Because this is the thing about prison, really. The other things don't matter. It's as Dame Ethel Smythe is alleged to have said, when she was asked what she found the worst about Holloway, she said, "Couldn't get out." And I think that's really it. And when people say, "Oh, well, look how wonderful time they have. They can have their flowers and their pictures and their lights and all the rest of it," they haven't got a handle on the door. That's what's missing in the cell. And until you know about that, that you can't get out, it certainly makes you think about all these people who suffer so much worse than that. All these people who were picked up, put in concentration camps, and nobody even knew where they were. It's a terrible thing to do to people, I think. That was the worst of Hitler's thing, I think. Though, of course, the people who were in the concentration camps, in Hitler's concentration camps to begin with, were communists, not Jews. He was turning the Jews out, but he wasn't keeping them in.
When you were arrested, did you have a lawyer or some defence in court?
I asked for permission to take legal advice for a week, which gave me a bit of time to tidy things up, leave things in proper way. No, I didn't. I offended the magistrate right at the beginning by saying I'd rather affirm than take the oath. You have to take the Bible and say you swear to speak the truth. And I said I would rather affirm. And he was a very red-faced, angry sort of man. His name was Sandbach. I think he's died since. Probably had an apoplectic fit because he looked as though he might. He was very much against me, quite understandably. I quite understood it. Anyway, that was it. Of course, it was in Holloway. It was just as difficult there as regards food and everything as it was outside. You had to take your ration book in. And I had not got a gas mask because I sort of had kind of conscientious objection to it. And so when I was there, I thought afterwards, well, they very nearly wouldn't have me because I hadn't got a gas mask. And they insisted upon supplying me with one. I had to have one. They were much use as a sick headache. They really were. Couldn't possibly have preserved you from anything, but that was one of the things. Oh, and I got into trouble right at the beginning because the doctor, they come round and say, are you all right? And put a stethoscope somewhere there, and I suppose this doctor thought I looked a bit different from the ordinary run of abortionists and petty thieves, people of that kind who are in Holloway. So she asked me, which she hadn't any right to, but she did ask me what I was in for. So when I told her, she was simply furious and said, if you'd been in Germany, you'd have been shot. So I said, yes, that's very likely. And she said, and that's what I'd do to you. So I, forgetting that I wasn't in Hyde Park and shouldn't answer back, said, you mean you agree with Hitler? That's what I'd do to you, she said. Helen said that. So, of course, she was furious, and she really was very unpleasant to me all the time I was there. You soon learn that it's a great mistake to answer back.